Blog Talk Radio.
Health Innovation on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Welcome, everyone. I'm Greg Masters, the creator, producer, and co-host of the broadcast. And today, I fly solo as my co-host, Dr. Phil Marshall, is on the road, and we'll be back next week for our chat with Dr. Farzad Mostashari, former director of the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT and now founder and CEO of Allidade, a physician-directed ACO management company. So, Phil, we'll welcome you back next week. And this week in Health Innovation is brought to you by Health Innovation Media, where we monitor the innovation impulse from idea to business model. On the broadcast today, we resume our continuing focus on innovation in the emerging digital health economy with Jay Shiver, MHA and fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives, and who's also an assistant professor at George Mason University. Jay is a published author with more than 35 years of experience in healthcare as a hospital and health system executive, physician practice management executive, academic, and consultant. Jay has extensive experience with board and senior management in developing vision, integrated delivery systems, re-engineering business process, hospital operations, and physician practice management. Jay is widely published, speaks at the national meetings, and teaches graduate healthcare management. On the broadcast, we'll discuss the healthcare zeitgeist, drilling into opportunities and examples presented by the retail and consumer-directed healthcare market. We'll learn a little bit about healthcare is moving rapidly into this consumer-driven model, including what they expect and how providers and payers are positioning to serve them. So, Jay, welcome to this innovation.
Thank you, Greg. It's good to be here.
Glad you can make it today. So, well, before we get into it, I wanted to just set up the basis for the chat today. We were both at the World Healthcare Congress. I believe it was the second annual summit on integrated delivery systems. And we were having lunch with John Madison. John Madison is the chief medical informatics officer of Kaiser Permanente Southern California. And we were having a bit of a chat about this potential polarity, if you will, between delivery systems and the retail marketplace, and that there might be between these two zeitgeists, so to speak. So let me ask, ACOs and the enabling ACA on a collision course with what's happening in the retail marketplace?
It's a good question. And the jury is going to be out for a little while, but that said, as this market shifts from the historical reimbursement models that we've seen in the past to the new marketplace, there's going to be a lot of different models out there, and they're going to have to learn to play together for a while. We may see one dominate at the end of the day, but right now there's a plurality of options. And they're all we're innovating, as your program would indicate. We're innovating with new ways to do the business. So the accountable care organization is one of those models, and at this point in time, is perhaps the most aggressive and innovative of all the models out there.
So let's start off here talking a little bit about the initiative that you are intimately familiar with. I believe it's a Virginia-based system, hospital-centric system, that's made a fairly substantial commitment to the retail and consumer sector. footprint, and what's the strategic direction of the initiative?
Well, there's two or three of them that are actually competing, and this is one of the levels of competition. As these larger healthcare systems begin to confront each other in local markets, and as you and I have talked about before, healthcare, certainly for you and I, it's at a very local level. As these healthcare systems, be they national or regional, they compete at a local level for market share. And retail medicine is one of the ways in which they are beginning to confront each other. In particular, there's a couple in the Northern Virginia market where I happen to reside that are into the retail market in a fairly big way. A couple of them have been in it for a long time, going back 30, 35 years. Convenient health care in the form of urgent care and freestanding emergency centers began to evolve, actually started here in the Northern Virginia market. Today we're seeing even more smaller variations on that theme. I refer to them as kiosks. You may see them within large pharmacies or big box stores where a nurse practitioner is practicing retail medicine. And the Inova Healthcare System has been a leader in this field for the last 40 years. Today, they do have affiliations with nurse practitioner practices located within pharmacies in the local market here.
So that's good context. Maybe it might make sense front with what is retail medicine, and is it simply another way of referring to the consequences of high deductible health plans?
I would suggest to you that the high deductible health plan is a financial incentive for the development of retail medicine. On the other hand, retail medicine, by my definition, simply put, is healthcare when the consumer pays directly. And that would be you or I going to a healthcare provider and opening our billfolds and not just presenting an insurance card. That takes the intermediary, the insurance company, out of the process. And retail medicine works very well in an environment of high deductible plans because in that model, the owner of the high deductible plan pays out of pocket up to the deductible level, be that with a HSA, health savings account, which is pre-tax dollars, or if it's just a high deductible plan with no HSA tied to it. That's cash on the barrelhead medicine. That's the old Marcus Welby model of bringing a basket of chicken eggs to see the doctor. And the payment transaction is between the provider and the consumer, healthcare when the consumer pays.
So could that be part of maybe the difficulty of one's wrapping their mind around this whole question? Maybe in the past you've had a pretty clear division that cash and carry is cash and carry, but anything that's third-party reimbursed is subject to a different set of laws or existential circumstances, as you referred.
Very much so. The old model was established 50 years ago, mostly right after World War II. It became the predominant way of healthcare being purchased. That was the use of a third-party intermediary or insurance company who removed the purchase decision away from the consumer and put it in the hands of the insurance company, and the negotiation was between the providers, doctors and hospitals, and the insurance carrier. The consumer only went out and partook of that benefit when they wanted to interact with a healthcare provider. Payment was not an overriding concern. Under the new models, cash payment, out-of-pocket expense to the consumer, the patient, is becoming more and more of an upfront issue and it's part of the decision process that one makes when one seeks out medical care. And the role of the insurance company becomes almost secondary in that decision process after the determination is made by the patient based on either access, cost, quality, or blind faith to purchase the service and pay the money.
So, and what do you attribute the, what are the principal forces that basically driving, defining those marketplace distinctions?
At this point, the logical principal forces, I think we can all define, but I would add the caveat that that knowledge is not generally available and not uniformly available when it is available. For example, quality, cost, and accessibility are ways we would, decision points we would look at in making any consumer purchase. In healthcare, however, we can't just go to the Consumer Digest and look up quality of the product. We don't necessarily know where it is and what the normal store hours are, which we would know if we went to a department store. And the price is, even in the best of circumstances in most communities, undefinable at the front end. This is getting better. And as the market matures, we're going to find ways as consumers of getting that information. But at this point in time, those three points are hard to define and almost impossible for any one consumer to get all three of those decision influencing facts on the table prior to making a purchase. Much of what we do today, we go out and we purchase based on faith and blind necessity.
And of course, I guess what I was getting to is we both span three decades back into this industry.
And, my secret's out.
And so forth. But the structural characteristics of the underlying delivery system are well in play over multiple decades, and they pretty much reach the point where healthcare is just unaffordable. So the insurance companies, if you can call them insurance companies anymore, they seem to be more like benefit solutions providers, through slicing and dicing benefit redesign, are pushing more and more of responsibility off of the plan and onto individual members. So you've got the structural characteristics intact. Nothing's really happening to change the cost basis of healthcare. But now you have the Affordable Care Act that leverages into this whole new scenario of creating the relationships between buyer, payer, and provider. Talk about that.
The Affordable Care Act in many ways is a historical amalgamation of many, many structural solutions to the issue you just addressed, which is the financial structure of the healthcare system in America. And the Affordable Care Act puts in place some suggested structural changes, puts in place some very strong financial incentives that could force all of the participants to come to the table and make structural changes. And as we do this, the overriding power of the market is pushing everybody to the table probably faster than the federal government can possibly do it. And that goes back to your point of cost shifting from the insurance plan covering all services rendered with little or no accountability on the behalf of the consumer, accountability for the cost by the consumer, moving a lot of the responsibility for the upfront cost decision to the consumer. Within the old traditional insurance model, that is seen in more money within the deductible of a traditional insurance plan, be it indemnity or PPO. The consumer has a heavier deductible burden and a heavier copay burden, or a heavier purchase burden or a combination of all three, and employers are using that to shift the cost to the consumer, and it's happening very, very rapidly. Another option for pressuring the public into being insured is for all employers are now mandated, all employers over a certain number within the law are mandated to provide a health insurance benefit, and that qualifying benefit is defined within the law. Or, failing that, the employer pays a tax. For the unemployed who are not entitled to public assistance through Medicaid or other public insurance, they must also purchase a health insurance plan, and the federal government has created the exchanges. Some states are doing it themselves. Federal government's also doing it and backing up the states. And those people who are going without health insurance, either through the exchanges or through an employer, are also going to be taxed. So there are financial incentives being set up such that everybody who has a job and has that benefit, or is unemployed and doesn't have the health insurance benefit, has financial incentive to acquire it. Those who fall within certain parameters financially, right now I believe it is four times federal poverty level, have financial incentive and financial benefit to go into the exchanges and purchase health insurance. And then the states have a financial incentive to raise the qualifying benefit for Medicaid such that more of the poor and disenfranchised can purchase or can have health insurance through Medicaid programs. The Accountable Care Act might be referred to as having corralled everybody into the paddock, and now they're moving the posts in tighter and tighter, and everybody is going to hopefully have an incentive to be financially covered in the event of a illness or injury.
So you use the word hopefully. Is there order here? Is this a rational response to the existential realities on the ground of healthcare? Can this be orchestrated in such a way to harmonize all of these, you know, seemingly moving parts, sometimes at odds with each other? And does that go to the point and include the retail market in this overall mix of initiatives that the ACA seems to address?
Well, if one comes from the position that citizens of this country historically have demonstrated a high degree of independence and freedom of choice, then you have to look at where the market is and where the federal government is coming from with the ACA as offering a lot of options, all of which might have a cohesive model at a local level. I do not believe all of these models are necessarily going to exist evenly across the country. Healthcare is really a very local marketplace. That's one of our serious understandings about healthcare, is that the markets are fairly local. We do not, as individuals, have the ability to travel for all services, all distances. We must have services within a local market, local in a large Midwestern state with thin population might be defined differently than it would be in Manhattan. But we demand access to care, and we demand it at certain within certain cultural norms. The difference between how healthcare is paid for on one coast is very different than it is on the other. Managed care and the HMO model was developed on the West Coast, has been in place for 60 years, and culturally quite accepted. in many parts of the West Coast, not so much on the East Coast, not so much in the Midwest, where we have slightly different cultures and our history of independence has evolved differently. That doesn't mean one is better, one is worse, but that is they are trying to accommodate many different options. Hence, within the Accountable Care Act, there are a number of different models offered and incentives that are trying, I believe the effort is, to drive purchasers and users of the health insurance market into an option that's laid out. There may even be some new ones coming up. Retail is just one of those. Retail, it was actually strongly enforced back in 2004 with the passage of the health savings account, which allowed consumers to fund pre-tax dollars into a fund that could be used to offset a deductible when tied to a high deductible plan. That model works very well for certain members of the population, people who are healthy, people who are self-employed and don't have options of group insurance, or those who might be unemployed and not eligible for some federal program like Medicare or Medicaid. But it's not the only option out there. Our pluralistic society is not going to, certainly not immediately going to jump into one homogeneous model.
And you correctly point out that obviously all healthcare is local, and the whole high deductible vision it seems to have retail qualities inside an insurance product strategy. The thing that I'm most concerned with and wondering is this an either-or choice, is to the extent that the direct marketplace, the either the membership, non-part docs who have opted out of the system, is can that, if the ACA is about driving clinical integration and business models that are accountable care-like, where there's increasing risk assumed by the participants, and retail at least expressed at one level as this direct practice marketplace, are those
I think they are, in many ways, at a societal level, they're complementary to each other in that they do allow individual choice within some limits. We have options. If as an individual we're healthy and we want to have a high deductible plan that will protect the assets in the event of a catastrophic problem, but we're healthy enough we don't believe and we're willing to take the risk that we can carry the financial burden of the high deductible, then from an economic model and from a freedom of choice model, retail medicine fits into that niche very nicely, in that retail medicine competes on price for the individual consumers to make a positive choice. The Accountable Care Act and the more integrated models, as you and I have talked about previously, the Independent Practice Association, the Accountable Care Organization, the Integrated Delivery Systems, these are larger entities that are going to make business decisions. They're going to have overhead tied to them, and they are going to be catering to a larger geographic market than would a retail medical establishment. It's much like the distribution of perhaps one, the analogy could be big box store versus local grocery store. The local grocery store relies on people who are historically customers and have a way to get to this local market. Then you have a large big box option but you got to get on the highway in a car and drive to it, park in a big lot, and hoof it into a big box store and go around the entire place to buy your services. The two are different. One's a smaller market, one's a much larger market. One sells to one group of customers, one sells to a different group who has different priorities. Retail medicine is a market that works very well at a very local level. And
so, Jay, let me ask you this. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
So would,
no, please.
Would the big box equivalent be these massive emerging integrated delivery systems?
It's not a bad description. Depending on the delivery system, some delivery systems are integrated on bases other than geography and market. Most evolved as contiguous markets began to collide with each other and the providers merged. So you ended up with these large regional systems, many, I would even say most of which, have geographically contiguous service areas, whereas some of the national chains, the HCAs of the world, Ascensions, these are organizations that came together under a slightly different business model and don't have necessarily the geographically contiguous market. Ironically, there's a blend of local regional retail medicine actually within the big box store, in the sense that many of the large big box retailers are moving toward retail medicine via what I call the kiosk located within the big box store. And another business model might even be companies, national pharmaceutical chains like CVS, that are moving into the health care, health provider space, not just via the pharmacy, not just via off-the-shelf medical supplies, but also through having in-house providers within the establishment who can actually prescribe medicines and treat patients, with groups such as MinuteClinic moving into the large pharmaceuticals, the Walgreens, the CVSs, the Walmarts of the world. So these are all models, none of which is necessarily going to win, none of which is necessarily going to lose, all of which are currently being tested to try and capture a chunk of one of the largest businesses this country has, and that is the medical industrial complex.
Yeah, well said. So there you have it. I mean, inside what may arguably be a $3 trillion economy, just our healthcare ecosystem, if you will.
Right.
There's high degree of variability and a worshiping of pluralism. So no one size fits all. But let's go back to this integration big box. At least on the provider side, and arguably bleeding into the payer or insurance product side, is integration at the level of the institution, typically hospitals, health systems, and so forth, as the aggregator. Let's talk about that sort of big box influence on particularly what you're seeing over in the in your part of the world, the Virginia, Northern Virginia.
The Virginia market is not necessarily unique, except that unlike most geopolitical spheres, Virginia began aggregating healthcare via the hospitals 30 years ago, and it began happening at a very rapid pace, and it began with geographically contiguous markets, such that today, if you looked at Virginia from a high altitude, you would see, I believe, five very large healthcare systems that dominate the state geographically, and there may only be four independent, unaligned hospitals left in the entire state. Everybody else is part of a large system. And markets, geographic markets, are dominated by an extremely powerful and well-organized provider. If you look in Southeast Virginia, it would be the Sentara Healthcare System, started in Norfolk, and now the dominant player in the Tidewater area of Virginia. In the polar opposite corner, Valley Health in Winchester, Virginia, dominates the Shenandoah Valley and the northern part of the valley. The Inova Healthcare System is the dominant player in northern Virginia near the district. Carilion is in the southwest corner. In the center of the state, it is predominantly the Bon Secours System, and that's the one market where it is fairly competitive because you have HCA as their number one competitor in that market. That happened over the last 25 years. In the last 5 years, the Sentara Healthcare System has moved out of the Tidewater area into, for example, the Valley and the Charlottesville market, and now Northern Virginia. Novant out of Charlotte, North Carolina, has moved into the Northern Virginia market. And we're beginning to see a change from the geographic market concentration to different business models that rely on other structural elements to grow the organization. The Sentara Healthcare System, for example, has acquired physical assets in three geographically disparate locations across the state. It doesn't make sense when one looks at contiguous markets. Why would they do that? That's because I believe their strategy is to rely more on the acquisition of influence via the health insurance product that their firm has. The Sentara Healthcare System has a mature insurance product, and they're beginning to bring it into the markets where they have access points. So no longer are they acting as a provider, but they're acquiring market as a payer. Totally different strategy. The Inova Healthcare System has links to the Valley Healthcare System in the upper northwest corner of the state that spans across areas influenced by HCA and Novant. So Inova is looking at making a physical jump out of its comfort zone of contiguous markets in Northern Virginia. Same is true for the Carilion. Yes, sir.
I knew that it would happen. Time blows by. We almost feel like we scratched the surface here on an important topic. Let me ask you as we move towards the close, given that, and yes, that's the structural characteristics of that market, but probably not too dissimilar from many other markets where institutions...
No, very similar.
Do physician-led enterprises, much like what Aldate is hoping to organize, and way back when, once upon a time, a company called FICOR was acquiring and managing medical practice, can they be a countervailing force in this move towards integration, or is this just too little too late?
In most markets, perhaps too little too late. The positive answer is yes, they can be, but it's going to require physicians to think like business people and get out of the model of the Marcus Welby private practice model and understand that market influence is the only way to influence a market. And until you want to do that, to get market influence, they need to consolidate in very powerful, tight economic entities that can, in fact, go nose to nose with the wealthy provider systems and the insurance companies. They need to be indispensable to their market. I would like to see more physician consolidation led by physicians.
There you have it. So be sure we'll hear more about that next week with Dr. Farzad Masashari and his narrative around physician-led ACOs. I want to thank my guest today, Jay Shiver, who's a professor at George Mason, assistant professor at George Mason University. He's an author, consultant, lecturer, and all-around good guy for his time today. We do this week on This Week in Health Innovation at 10 a.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. And today, this is Greg Masters saying bye now.
Thank you, Greg.
That was when I ruled the world.